it's Foxy. Willie B is out today. We have a very special show for all you wrestling fans listening today. The mayor has been so excited for this show. He is the founder, president, and CEO of this podcast. He is the booker of the stars. He is the man with the plan. Ladies and gentlemen, Mayor McCall.
Oh, thank you so much for that, Foxy. Thank you for filling in today. As always, we have a very, very special guest with us today. He has wrestled with such organizations as the WWA, Southeast Championship Wrestling, and Mid-South Wrestling. He has used his real name along with portraying the monstrous character Lord Humongous. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only, please welcome Jeff Van Camp.
Thank you. I appreciate you allowing me to be on your program.
Oh, no, the pleasure is all ours. Thank you. Thank you for, you know, being with us today. We've look very forward to this one. Let's go ahead and jump into it. Let's get into your background. Where are you from, and where did you grow up, Jeff?
All right, originally I'm from Indiana, from New Albany. Played football and wrestled at New Albany High School. Graduated in 1980. Then I got a full football scholarship to the University of Louisville.
Cardinals.
Louisville Cardinals, absolutely. I played defensive tackle.
Awesome.
And then during the time at University of Louisville, they used to hire football players as t-shirt security to walk the wrestlers back and forth to and from the ring at Louisville Gardens. And that's how I got to meet the wrestlers. I used to walk them as security, t-shirt security to and from the ring. And then they had us going to different spot shows throughout Kentucky and southern Indiana to just protect them as they come out of the locker room and to and from the ring.
That's a very, very interesting story right there. So you were running – so the Louisville Cardinal football team would run security for the wrestlers. So was it because of your size or anything like that? How did you get noticed as far as, like, just, you know, you standing out?
Well, it just wasn't what the wrestler. It was concerts. I mean, I did security for big names like Tom Jones, Iberdell, Humperdinck, Styx, Van Halen, Bo Cephas, you name it. I was right there at Louisville Gardens and also at Freedom Hall. They'd hire Louisville football players for Brantley security, and we'd walk, make sure everybody was behaving and protecting the stars. So I was working at Louisville Gardens, and a guy named Jerry Lawler, I know who he is from Mid-South.
We've heard of the King once or twice on this show before.
Absolutely. He's a wonderful guy. He's one got me started. He said, Jeff, I got this great idea. I want you to become a wrestler. I said, well, let me finish my football career and I'll see how it goes. And so he had this idea back then. It was early, you know, early 83. He had an idea about doing a Road Warrior gimmick. So me and my buddy named Pete Bowen, he used to play football at University of Louisville too, his offensive tackle. And we got invited to Mid-South Coliseum to learn how to wrestle, because we used to walk the wrestlers to and from the ring, and they knew who we were, and we were pretty big guys. So Pete, at the last minute, Jerry invited us to Mid-South Coliseum on Saturday morning, and Pete, at the last minute, chickened out. He said he didn't want to go. So my brother and I hopped in the car, and we drove from Louisville, from New Albany to Memphis, Tennessee on a Friday night, and woke up Saturday morning and went to Mid-South Coliseum and met Jerry Lawler again, and he put me in the ring right there to Mid-South Coliseum, and about 3 hours later he gave me a booking sheet and said, okay, Jeff, now you're a professional wrestler. I said, what? Oh, hold on. I had no idea what I was even doing, you know what I'm saying? But he said, you're ready to go, let's do this thing. I said, okay, you got that much confidence in me, yeah, let's do it.
Either he had so much confidence in you, or Jerry Lawler would not make much money on a wrestling school turning people out in 3 hours time.
I heard that. Yes, I mean, he had a lot of confidence in me. He believed in me, and I believed in him. And he obviously saw something there that you know, I'm glad he saw some talent, and I was very happy to be part of his organization. And I wrestled with him out of Memphis for about 6 months.
Okay, so what a way to get started. You come to the you. You make a road trip, you come to the Mid-South Coliseum, you start training on a Saturday. Jerry obviously, you know, sees something very, very special in you, you know, goes through just a couple hour training, turns you loose, then you're booked in the territory for the next 6 months. What was that like?
You know, it was amazing. I had no idea. He gives you a booking sheet, told me where I need to be and what town to be at, and you know, pretty much you're on your own. You're from that point forward, you're a professional wrestler, and you.
So you were very green at that point. Who are some of the wrestlers you would work with those first 6 months just getting in the business?
Oh my gosh, everybody there was so nice. I worked a lot with Austin Idol. He was a wonderful, wonderful human being. Oh my gosh, there's so many different guys. Spike Huber, I don't know if you remember him or not. He had come out of WWA, and he was Dick Bruiser's son-in-law at the time. And when Jerry Lawler finally said, "Jeff, you know, it's time for you to move on. It's time to learn and get better, and it's time to go to a different territory." That's when Spike invited me to go to WWF in Indianapolis. It's pretty much in my back home, hometown. From Indiana, and I wrestled out of there from Chicago, Northern Indiana, Detroit. We wrestled out of Illinois, and also one time in Iowa. So that's how I got to go to WWA after I left, Memphis area.
Man, we're going to jump around some. January 7th, 1984, you and Dick the Bruiser would defeat Abdullah the Great and Jerry Valiant to win the WWE World Tag Team Championships. What are your memories of working with Dick the Bruiser and, you know, winning a championship with him?
You know, he gave me an opportunity to grow and get better. He's very, very gruff in his voice, but he was a super, super nice guy. He didn't put up with no crap, that's for sure. He most definitely told you what he wanted and how you wanted to do it, and then you had to figure out how to do it the way he wanted you to do it. But he pretty much gave you whatever freedom that you wanted to do to get the job done. I'm so happy that he gave me an opportunity to be his partner with a tag team belt.
Yeah, not many people can say they start. Well, how'd you start in wrestling? Well, I was trained by Jerry the King Lawler at the Mid-South Coliseum, then went on, you know, to tag up and win a championship belt with Dick the Bruiser. I mean, what a start already.
Oh, my gosh. So, very honored, very humbled. It humbles you very much winning a belt like that. I was in Hammond, Indiana, I believe, up near Chicago.
Who are some of the other stars you would get the pleasure of working with in the WWA?
Abdullah the Butcher was Abdullah the Great, and there's a lot of different guys. Spike Huber, there's Red Dog, it was Dick the Bruiser's like son. Oh my gosh, there's so many different guys. Bruiser Brody was in that area right when I was getting in that territory. He had just left, but I met him prior to him leaving. Golly, man, there's so many different guys. Bobo Brazil, I know who you know who he is.
Absolutely,
he
helped me out. The great Bobo Brazil.
He helped me out tremendously. I can't say enough great things about him. He taught me a lot of different things. What a great professional human being he was. And when I lived down here in Florida, I met one of his relatives in that community which I live and shared some photographs with me and Bobo with her. And she knew who her grandpa was, but she didn't really actually see stories or anything, and I was able to give her some photos, and it was pretty nice.
Wow. So you spent your time in WWA, then tell everybody next what your next move would be in professional wrestling.
Well, I understand there was an individual named Mike Stark, started the Humongous Gimmick in Memphis, Tennessee, but he was a teacher, I believe. And he gave up the gimmick, and I got a phone call from Jerry Lawler, who, as he started me out in a career, and by this time, about 6-8 months later, he says, "Jeff, are you ready to do another gimmick?" And Austin Idol gave me the phone call as well and kind of talked me into it, because he was kind of like my hey, and he really helped me out, and Mike McCord. So I got a phone call from him in Chicago, Illinois, and said, "You need to come to Pensacola, Florida, under Continental Championship Wrestling Southeastern with Ron Fuller." Bob Armstrong and himself, Pork Chop Cash, and all these guys, and we're going to teach a new gimmick called Lord Humongous. Put on a hockey mask.
I just want to stop right there for a second. I want to explain to. I'm trying to, a lot of times on this show and stuff too, I'm trying to educate the younger audience on what true wrestling is all about and everything like that. I want to explain to the audience the character of Lord Humongous. It's based on a gang leader from the 1981 movie Mad Max 2, The Road Warrior. Character was very, very tall, physically impressive, and wore a hockey mask. So I guess you having that stature you had, the size, you being like a monstrous man, they thought you would fit that character just perfectly.
That's correct. And, you know, I worked out all the time, being a football player, being an athlete, and Austin thought it'd be perfect for me. He had to, actually, when I left Chicago area, I moved to Pensacola. I lived with Austin and his wife, Brenda, for about 3 weeks at their house. My wife and I, and I got to know Austin really well, and we put the gimmick together, and he pretty much gave me all the instructions on what he thought Humongous should be. He said the most important thing, whatever you do, you have to protect the gimmick as much as you can. Whatever, don't ever take off the mask, because the mystique of Humongous would be dead if the mask ever came off. And when I wrestled him, my mask never came off.
How did you pull that off? You would stand out from everybody, like far as the other, even the other wrestlers, the crowd, everyone. How did you pull that off? Like, you know, coming to the building, leaving the building. I mean, people would have to, you know, nobody ever knew that you. They're like, hey, that's Lord Humongous. So, how did you pull that off, Jeff?
Honestly, it was very tricky. I had to get to the building early, and I left late because most of the time I was main event, and I always wore a hood, like a hangman's noose. A hoodie around my neck, around my face to protect the gimmick. And then what I did was on top of that, when I got about 2 or 3 miles from the auditorium, that's when I put the hood on. And I had to cover up my face. And then I went into the ring, and what I did was I had a pantyhose to make myself look bald. I wore a pantyhose over my head to protect my hair. And then put the mask on top of my face.
And all that went back to Austin Idol really going over it, like protect the gimmick at all cost.
Protect the gimmick at all cost. He said, now Jeff, he said, you don't enter the ring like a normal human being, you know, like the rest of the wrestlers, because you're not going to be a regular wrestler. You're going to be something else, something spectacular.
You're something special.
You always enter the ring, something special. You always enter the ring stepping over the top rope. So that's what I always did. Entering and exiting the ring, always stepped over the top rope because I was tall enough to do it. And like wearing a belt, when you wear a belt, don't ever wear the belt around your waist. Get yourself a chain, like a dog chain, and wear it around your neck. That'll make you even more mystique.
I agree with that. And that's some great advice from, you know, Austin Idol. Doing this show, we've had the pleasure of, you know, encountering some really big names, having some great stars on the show. One of them has been the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. I reached out to Ron and told him we're going to interview you. Ron had nothing but great things to say about you. He said you're a great guy, great friend. He really enjoyed your time of, you know, you working with him. Talk to us about Ron.
You know, Ron is, you know, he's actually taller than I am, but what a super, super nice guy. I mean, you know, even when I did the interviews, Humongous never spoke. And that's what sometimes it kind of comes back to haunt me today, because a lot of people don't know who the person is in the mask. And I know who I am and I know what I did, but a lot of people don't understand what Humongous did during the period of time in which I wrestled. And Ron Fuller gave me that opportunity. You know, it wasn't like in Memphis or with Jerry Lawler or WWA with Dick the Bruiser. I had to do interviews. I had to talk on TV. But with Humongous, all I had to speak was with my eyes. And Ron gave me that freedom to have a manager come talk for me on my behalf, and then I would stand there and talk to the audience with my eyes, open up my eyes, and kind of – it was very scary looking. A lot of people have told me that, and that's how they kind of – the mystique of Humongous lived – through what I was portraying on TV.
Why do you think I've been bugging you so much to do this interview, Jeff? I wanted the world to hear about Lord Humongous, and you know, the talk to the people about all this. You know, definitely, you couldn't have portrayed that character any better. And the teachers you had, man, that you couldn't ask for better teachers than Jerry Lawler, Austin Idol, surrounded by people by Dick the Bruiser, Ron Fuller. I mean, you, when it came to, you know, supporting cast, you're probably one of the most blessed, you know, wrestlers I've had the chance to talk to, far as people just around you, in your ear, training you, guiding you, mentoring you, leading you. Man, that's phenomenal, Jeff. It really is.
Oh, I was very lucky, extremely lucky. You know, Bob Armstrong, everybody was giving me advice. And, you know, most of the people that I saw that went into wrestling, they didn't want to listen to the older guys who had the knowledge and knew what was going on. But me, I was like a sponge. I was learning and wanting to learn everything I possibly could about the business, and I wanted to be the best that I possibly could. And I was listening to the individuals, and like Jerry and Austin and Ron and Bob and, oh my gosh, all these guys, Porkchop Cash, and even, I don't know if you ever you got to interview Steve Williams or not, Dr. Death. He was a wonderful guy. He was awesome. We traveled together.
Absolutely.
And anyway, you know, he passed away of throat cancer 27 years ago, but he was a great guy. He wrote a book. And in his book, he even mentioned that that if the Mystique and Humongous would have been dead if my mask ever came off, because Jeff Van Camp didn't look the part as Lord Humongous. I was too much of a baby face, they said.
That's what I was going to say. He must have been referring, saying you look too much like the mask comes off, he looks like a nice guy. It looks like you're going to invite him over right for some Thanksgiving dinner.
That's true. You know, I mean, Ted DiBiase, we were good friends. We traveled together.
We've actually had the pleasure of having him on the show before, the Million Dollar Man.
I understand. Yeah, and, you know, he had a family business or a barbecue business in Mississippi. I don't know if you knew that or not. And he invited me over to their place of business several times to eat with them
down there around Clinton, Mississippi.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Ted. Speaking of Ted, he just had a birthday this week.
Yeah, I know, it's amazing. And so did Jim Duggan. And he's a boy. I tell you, you know, I'm so privileged and blessed to be around all these individuals nowadays. And, you know, Jake the Snake is a wonderful individual. He and I are really good friends. We talk all the time. And actually, we've been together several different locations throughout the country fishing together.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we'll get to Jake momentarily. I know you and him did a little work in Mid-South together. I want to stay on Southeast for a minute, though. You would win the NWA Alabama Heavyweight Championship from Porkchop Cash. What was it like working with Porkchop? Remind the fans of what an incredible legend Porkchop Cash was.
Oh, my gosh. Let me tell you, he was what a professional human being this man is. I learned a lot from him. He was the easiest, one of the easiest guys to work with. If you grabbed him too hard, he'd start yelling potato, potato.
what was that about?
Oh, the potato. Well, you know, potato in the wrestling, it means you're too rough. You're hitting too hard, or
you're being too stiff with him.
You're being too stiff. Yeah,
I got you.
Lighten up. You know. So you had to be really, really careful. And Porkchop was a little older than I was too. So I had to be a lot gentler with Porkchop. You know, it's all through the actions of what you do in the ring, how you portray yourself. So everything I did was over exaggerated to make it look like I was, you know, really trying to kill somebody.
Yeah, you had to be careful. You could have really hurt somebody out there, Jeff.
You know, I at the time I was about 300 pounds, so I was most definitely had to wait behind me, that's for sure.
And it goes back to, too, you're a testament of, you know, who you were and how you handled yourself around the other guys. I'm sure behind your back they're like, my gosh, this guy's a monstrous of a man, and he's so humble. He's willing to be taught. He listens, you know, and I'm sure a lot of the guys, they probably didn't think, you know, as much of they did you, you know, were probably more, you know, talkative, more mouthy, thought they knew everything in the business, and, you know, and you just being humble, I'm sure got you so much further. With your appearance and being humble, you know, the sky was the limit with you.
Well, I appreciate that. I try to be like that through my whole life. That's the way I was raised. My mom and dad, my brother, the best thing about it is a lot of people like to, I guess, communicate and talk and just run their mouth a whole lot. Me, I'd like to sit back and listen and learn. You can actually learn a whole lot from somebody if you just sit back and listen to what they have to say. And then you take what they have to say and then you apply it to your gimmick.
My wife, Foxy, she would probably say that I need to listen a little bit more than I talk. would you say, Foxy? Would you agree with that?
I would definitely agree with that.
I need to learn to be more like Jeff.
Yes.
Okay. We've established today that I can be a lot more like Jeff and get further in my life, right?
No, you're a good guy.
If only I had Jeff's size.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks. Well,
but we're having.
I'm sure you're very humble.
Yeah, yes, sir. Very humble. we're having fun with what we're doing. You know, everybody in life has a, you know, we have different strengths and weaknesses, and we have different stuff we're matched up with. And no, I do not have the appearance of a monstrous wrestler like Jeff Van Camp, but I think I do okay on this podcast, though.
I'm sure. I appreciate you allowing me to be on your broadcast. Thank you.
I've been excited about it. If you can't tell,
I've been excited. He's been talking about it for weeks now.
Oh wow! Great.
Your final match in Southeast, would that be with the Flame?
Yeah, with Jody Hamilton. Yeah, sure was.
Yeah, talk to us about like your last match in Southeast before you would move on.
Well, I knew I had the belt, and I knew I had to give it up for Jody because they were pushing him hard in the territory, and so Jody was a great guy, a great great teacher. Him and Bob had a really good relationship, and so did Ron. I can't say enough great things about Ron Fuller. He's what's a wonderful guy with the Flame. He brought in a lot of great talent in Southeastern Continental, and Jody was a wonderful guy. I learned a lot from him because he always wore that mask as well, and he, you know, with the Flame, and he was very easy to work with, very professional man, that's for sure.
Ron comes from a wrestling royalty family. I pick up so much stuff. Just honestly, if I've got a question about something, why Ron and his wife are such great people too. And you know, I've got to give Ron credit. If I've got a question or something, I can, you know, send him a message. He's always very, you know, humble, always very eager to, you know, help me out a lot. And it's just, I can't think of a better fountain of knowledge than Ron Fuller. I really can't, especially, you know, with his family's history in the wrestling business. When it comes to Memphis wrestling, his family, you know, we don't have to, that's about four or five different shows right there, but we all know what Ron's family did, you know, Memphis wrestling and throughout the territory and everything. I mean, almost controlled one half of the, you know, the Southeast down there. What a wrestling royalty family.
Oh my gosh. And very humble. Ron was a very, very humble guy. I mean, I've never, honestly, the whole time I worked with Ron, I never saw him lose his temper. He was always very professional. He did a great job. He knew he had a great mind for the business, and he had a wonderful, everybody wanted to come to that territory, his territory. It was wonderful. I mean, you wrestle 7 days a week, and you could live in Pensacola and rest and drive to and from the venues in one day. It was awesome. It was a great place to learn, I think the furthest place we had to go was Birmingham and Huntsville a few times.
Not a bad road trip down there.
Oh, not at all. We were always in the Florida Panhandle, southeastern Alabama, all of Alabama, some in Georgia, and it was great. Mobile, it was a wonderful time. And there, a lot of people wanted to come to his territory just because of who Ron was and what kind of territory he had. It was amazing.
So we talked about Lord Humongous being the monstrous character. We've talked about, you know, Austin Idol telling you how to walk, how to step over the ropes, how to carry the belt, all like that. So was it a big shock when you had to turn babyface with it?
You know, it was. It was, even though I was still, like Ron was telling me once, he's, Jeff, even though you're going to turn babyface, you're still going to be a heel, but you're going to be a babyface heel. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. But at the time, you were probably thinking, what the hell is he talking about?
Yeah, I just, I had no idea. I said, okay, well, I'll just continue being who I am, and I'll be a babyface. And that's exactly what he wanted me to portray it. So that's what I did. And it worked because the audience popped, and it was a sellout crowd at the Farm Center in Dothan.
Actually, that does make a lot of sense, though, because you don't want to lose anything. That you don't want to lose the mystique of the character. The character kind of goes on, you know, the same. Just now we see the character with a little bit softer heart.
Right.
Yeah.
But he still is just like John Wayne picking up a chair and hitting somebody with it. You still have to use that. You still have to be a bad guy, but you're a good guy. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kind of like Stone Cold would become in later years. He was really, really a bad guy, but like people are like, oh, this is pretty cool. This guy's pretty cool right here.
Right. Yeah. So it's the same type of gimmick. And even like the Undertaker, I understand with him, and he used a couple of my moves that he used, and he gave me credit for in some of the moves that he did.
Oh, that's cool.
That's very cool right there. So after,
yeah, you know, I'm sorry, with Jake the Snake, when I after doing the DDT, I you know, rose up like in out of the ring. I just rose up from the waist, sitting up, and then he and everybody, oh my God, you know, what's going on? What's going to happen? And Undertaker took my role as that, and he portrayed the same way I did it in the ring. And so I was very humble. I'm honored for him to do something like that.
That's why I love this show, Jeff. I learn something new every time I do it. That is awesome to know. So, you know, to let the audience know your back's flat on the mat, then like you'd see the Undertaker. So apparently you'd said you'd taken a DDT from Jake, then you would just rise up.
Right, and everybody, because nobody ever stood up or sit up or got out of a DDT after Jake performed that maneuver on him. And when I jumped up, when I sat up, I said, oh my God, the audience, you could hear it. They was very quiet. They didn't know what was going to happen.
So were you the first one for that not to be a finish on, that it didn't end you?
That's correct.
Oh, wow. Very, very impressive, Jeff. Very cool. So after Southeast, you would go on to Mid-South.
I sure did, yes, sir.
Man, we all hear all the stories. Everybody's got different perceptions, all like that. What your experience? What was it like working with Bill Watts?
Oh boy, I tell you, that was a totally different experience from working Southeastern and then going to Mid-South with Bill Watts. His territory was a lot bigger. First time I wrestled, he bought me a plane ticket. I went to Shreveport for television, right there at the Boys Club. Stayed there, and I'm going to give you a secret. Every time I went into Austin taught me this as well. He said, anytime you go into a hotel, you never register under your name. You pick somebody's, like a movie star name that you, and that's who you sign in as. So when I went to the hotels, I always used the names from Casablanca, Sydney Greenstreet.
That's cool.
So that's who my name was in every hotel I ever stayed at. I was Sydney Greenstreet, and the guys knew that. So when they called the hotel, they didn't ask for me. They asked for Sydney Greenstreet.
So that's funny, though. Nobody would look at the hotel manager wouldn't look at the restroom and be like, fourth floor, room 3, we've got Lord Humongous there.
right.
was at that time, was Bill Dundee doing anything with Mid-South, booking or wrestling or anything?
No, actually, I believe he was in Charlotte, because Bill had contacted me, because I met Bill in Memphis, and he knew what kind of town it was, and a lot of guys were talking it back and forth at that period of time, and Bill wanted me to go to Charlotte. But I was contacting Bill Watts directly, and he convinced me to come to his territory instead of Charlotte. So that's the reason I went to Mid-South instead of Charlotte.
Gotcha. You're also, while you're in Mid-South, you're also managed by Sir Oliver Humperdinck.
Oh my gosh, what a, you know what?
What a character, what an awesome character.
Oh, he was awesome. You know what, that contact, I mean, between me and you, he was the ugliest individual I've ever seen in my life. But he got the girls. Let me tell you something, that man got more women than you can shake a stick at.
Well, so he'd have them lined up at the hotel when he got back?
Boy, let me tell you, you could beat him with an ugly stick and he'd still be ugly. But he got more women than you can shake a stick at. Unbelievable how many women that man had.
Wow, breaking news on Wrestling Talk. Sir Oliver Humperdinck had swag that no one knew about.
Oh, my God. Oh, yes. You ain't kidding. That man, I don't know if he was, you know, but anyway, he most definitely had the women.
That's an awesome story. Thank you, Jim. What are some of your other memories of that sticks out working in Mid-South?
Honestly, traveling with Steve Williams, Dr. Death. What a great guy. He had this van. I understand that he wouldn't allow anybody else to drive his van, but he allowed me to. I guess he trusted me that much. And at the time, he had a girlfriend named Tammy, and she and I are friends now on Facebook. She still lives in the Shreveport area. And what a great, great human being Steve was. And I just remember traveling with Steve. I can't go into a lot of details what we used to do, but...
Understandable.
He, a lot of things I want to keep to myself, but Steve was what a great human being and what a great guy. You know, one of the best things I could remember about one of the individuals there was Hacksaw Jim Duggan. What a great guy. We partied with him on Halloween night after one of the wrestling, and I think it was Lake Charles. We had a great time. It was Dr. Death's, me, and Hacksaw Jim Duggan all at his house at late at night partying. It was a great, great time in my life.
Was it was Bill Watts the one that had you film the Kiss video War Machine?
Yes, that is correct.
What was it like doing that?
You know, it's amazing. I'm gonna let you give you a little secret. That the day I was hung over the day I filmed that video. I was so drunk the night before. And he picked me up at the hotel. I can't remember the gentleman's name now who filmed it. He picked me up at the hotel, and we drove to Bixby, Oklahoma, to a machine factory. And he thought it'd be a great location because there was an old submarine engine in the back of the compound where we filmed. And we got to go inside the, I had to change into my gimmick right there in their office. And then he filmed film what he wanted to film. It was fantastic. But that's where it was filmed at, in Bixby, Oklahoma.
It looks really cool. I saw that. And I want everybody to check that out. Lord Humongous, War Machine by Kiss. It's all over YouTube. I watched it, and I'm like, damn, I want a video too. Jeff must have thought this was so cool doing this.
Oh, it was awesome. It was a great time. And we only took, I think only took maybe a couple hours to film that thing.
Well, apparently, according to Jerry Lawler, I mean, you catch on very, very quick, man. All you need is a couple hours, and they send you on your way, man.
Well, Jerry, I can't say enough great things about him, too. You know, I got in the business when Andy Kaufman was, him and Jerry was going strong.
Absolutely.
I even got to travel a little bit with Andy Kaufman, if you believe that or not. I had dinner with him a few times.
Oh, talk to us about that. Cool.
You know what? I saw him on. I didn't really know who he was. I mean, I knew who he was, but I always thought it was a different character. But what a humble individual he was. Very nice. Him and his wife was extremely nice. I was stranded one time in Bardstown, Kentucky, and I just happened to go into a restaurant. It was a barbecue place, and he pulled in like maybe 10, 15 minutes later, And we sat and had dinner, and he offered me a ride. And I said, no, actually, my brother's coming to get me. But he wanted me to, he was going to take me back to Memphis. And I thought that was really nice. See, he stayed with me till my brother showed up in Kentucky at the little barbecue restaurant we was at. Just so happened And he knew who I was, and I knew who he was, and that's how we got to get to know one another. And we kind of communicated after that in all the locker rooms. It was pretty neat.
Not many people can say they had dinner with Andy Kaufman. That's pretty cool.
You know what? I just wish I had pictures of it, because, you know, back then we didn't have cell phones. We didn't take cameras and pictures and everything we did. I just wish, you know, now it's memories, but I it's great memories that I had. I just wish I had photographs of everything I'm telling you.
That I feel the same way. I would love to see a picture of you two, you know, together. And that's and what a good a testament too, though. We all hear stories of Andy, and we see different things and different people portray him in different lights, but you personally have had dinner with him and have nothing but great things to say about him. What a humble guy he was.
He was very, I mean, you know, it's just like me with Lord Humongous, the gimmick, you know, as a character that I portrayed and on camera or whatever, wherever I needed to be. But he was very humble, and he was down to earth and very easy to talk to. Very, very nice guy.
When we set out to do this podcast, we had a couple things in mind, and we had a couple, you know, unwritten norms that we wanted to follow. And one of the things was it's more like a feel good podcast. It's keeping the memories alive, talking about the stars of yesterday, telling stories like you're telling, not gossip, not gotcha or anything like that. So I would much rather somebody come on here and tell a positive story about somebody than a negative one, if that makes sense.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, I have nothing but great things. Even, you know, another person was very helpful to me. It was Jimmy Hart.
Foxy, we had the pleasure of meeting Jimmy Hart last August.
We sure did.
Yeah, Jimmy was nothing, but we're actually looking at, we're in the studio now, and we've got a picture of Jimmy Hart, myself, Foxy, my co-host Willie B, and Jimmy Hart. We went to Bolivar, Tennessee, and met him. What an awesome, awesome dude.
And he's very humble, he's down to earth, and he's very easy to talk to.
And with his age, he's probably in better shape than most people around this area.
Oh, without a doubt, he's a great, great, great shape. I mean, when I was in law enforcement, he came to Pensacola Civic Center, and I ran a program called Student Crime Stoppers in Pensacola as well, and he put a couple promos together for me with the Student Crime Stoppers program.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that too, though, because you have done some great, you know, public service things that I want the audience to know about, and we want to thank you for. So, talk to us about life after wrestling. How did your wrestling career end, and what was your next transition?
Well, actually, when I was working at Louisville Gardens, there was a lot of Louisville police officers that I got to meet, and they were very humble themselves at the Louisville Police Department, and when I was going to University of Louisville, I was taking criminal justice courses. And then I later graduated with my bachelor's degree with Troy State University in Dothan, Alabama, with a criminal degree in criminal justice with a minor in social studies. And I have an AS in general education. But anyway, they taught me about being a police officer, and I really enjoyed it. And I got to ride with them at Louisville. And that's how I wanted. I said, well, you know, after wrestling, I said, I wouldn't mind going back and being a police officer. So at the time, my wife and I was contemplating on starting a family. And I said, well, there's no way I can start a family doing the business I'm doing right now. So I decided to step out of the ring and be a police officer in Pensacola. And that's what I did. In July of 86, I became a Pensacola police officer.
Oh wow! Then you would become a deputy sheriff, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, sir. I sure did. I left the Pensacola Police Department, went with the Scammy County Sheriff's Office, same county, in 89. So I was with the Pensacola Police Department a little over 3 years, and I became a deputy sheriff with the Scammy County Sheriff's Office. And I stayed there till 2012.
Your time is in law enforcement. You also had some special legislation passed. Talk to us about that.
You know, I'm very happy, you know, to let everybody be aware that we was part of the Crime Stoppers program in Florida, and my buddy from Palm Beach County named Jim DeFago. We all knew at the time raising funds to help fund Crime Stoppers is getting to be harder and harder and harder because times are getting tough. So we decided to put a bill together that said $20 for everybody who gets arrested in the state of Florida has to pay the local Crime Stoppers program. Now, $3 of that would go to the clerk of the court, and $17 would be collected by the Attorney General's Office of the state of Florida. At the time was Bob Butterworth, and then Pam Bondi, and I got to meet a lot of different people through the legislative body of the government of state of Florida. And with that being said, it was a $5 million program at the time that was collected, and the Attorney General's Office of the state of Florida collected those funds, and each county which has a Crime Stoppers program would have to file a grant to the Attorney General's Office to apply for the funds that they had collected throughout the year. And it's about in the whole state of Florida, about $5 million, and each county had a different funding. So like, let's say Escambia County, we had like $125,000 collected on a yearly basis from people being arrested.
Oh, wow.
So that's how we got the funds to help fund the Crime Stoppers program. And part of that was from to fund TV programs, promotional programs, promotional ideas, and pay the rewards that people remain anonymous to get their money through the Crime Stoppers program to help solve crimes.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
You're also part of a television show called Wanted Fugitives. Talk to us about that.
You know, at the time, you know, America's Most Wanted was going off the air in 96, and I was wanting to start a program mirrored after America's Most Wanted in Pensacola. It's called Wanted Fugitives. So at the time, a Major Russ Sweeney had an idea of starting a local TV program called Wanted Fugitives, and that's what we started, and we profiled Wanted Fugitives. So I was in charge of a TV program, pretty much production, direction, and profiling wanted people on TV, and also doing crime reenactments of unsolved crimes throughout the Pensacola area.
Man, we appreciate you for your service and everything you've done, and you know, for the community and law enforcement as well, Jeff. Not only entertaining us as an awesome professional wrestler, but man, thank you. Want to personally thank you for your service as well.
Well, I appreciate it. I was very humbled to even be recognized for that, and because of that, a captain at the sheriff's office had put me in for also the year for the state of Florida, and actually I won it in 2004 for help capturing and apprehending over 10,000 wanted fugitives.
Wow, congratulations.
And solving unsolved murders and crimes in our area. And so I was very humble about that, and very honored and just privileged to be part of a great organization that was allowed to help capture those many people. Because how many police officers can say that they helped capture over 10,000 people, and helped sign the bill that Governor Bush at the time signed into law, stating that every criminal in the state of Florida has to pay $20 to the local Crime Stoppers program. So I was very humble about that too.
And that's why I have a new buddy, and his name is Jeff Van Camp.
Well, I appreciate it.
Well, you know, I was putting together, I take a lot of time, and I put together, you know, do a lot of research. I watch different things. I try to piece everything together. So, you know, I tried to highlight your wrestling career as best as I could. Then I wanted the audience to know about your awesome community service that you did and all like that. So I went back and I made a little goofy note here. I was like, you know, if Jeff would have stayed in wrestling, you know, with his size and all, and his love of criminal justice, McMahon should have given him the Big Boss Man gimmick.
That'd been great. You know, even Jake the Snake told me that if I would just stayed in a little bit longer, he said, Jeff, you would have been most definitely in the Hall of Fame. And you would have had a run with Hulk Hogan. Me and Hulk would have been a major draw.
Well, to some of us, I mean, I know you had a short time in the business, but to some of us, you're always Hall of Fame caliber, and you know, we enjoyed what you did, Jeff. We really did.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. I enjoyed my time as being Lord Humongous, as being Jeff Van Camp, the football player, being humble, and being just being part of the business is an honor enough.
I think the coolest part about the story is trained at the Mid-South Coliseum by Jerry Lawler for 3 hours, and here you go, son. Here you go.
You know, it's amazing. You know, my brother went with me, and Jerry trained him as well. And my brother had an opportunity to be a professional wrestler as well, Russell. And actually, at the last minute, he turned it down and said, no, I can't do this, because he looked at the Mid-South Coliseum, how big it was. I mean, you're talking thousands and thousands of people. And I was used to it playing college football, so it didn't bother me. But my brother was, he was scared to death. You know, he couldn't go out there by himself with a pair of shorts on and wrestle in front of everybody. But it didn't bother me one bit. So my brother turned it down. And I said, I'll do it. give it to me.
You just, before we end this, you just made me think of something. And I want to talk about a quick comparison. What was it like the Louisville Gardens versus the Mid-South Coliseum, as far as the people there, the atmosphere, the crowd, the intensity? Describe some of the similarities and differences there.
Oh my God, it was unbelievable how the crowd was totally different from walking the wrestlers to and from the ring, protecting the guys and then being one of the guys. So it's, you mean you put on a different hat. The biggest Coliseum ever worked under and in was the New Orleans Superdome, Thanksgiving night, 1985. Me and Jake the Snake was
Did y'all headline that show?
Main event. I'm sorry?
Did y'all headline that show?
Yeah, it was a Bill Watts. It was, and we wrestled as the main event. And just as soon as we got done wrestling, we couldn't even get out of our tights, so we had to hurry up, go back to the dressing room. They had a golf cart actually waiting for us at the end of the ring to take us to the. It was so far from the ring to their dressing room, so he put us in a golf cart and rolled back. So they had everything ready for us. I put on a pair of sweats. They drove us to the airport. Hopped in the Learjet and flew to Shreveport for the same same event for the same night.
Oh wow!
Wow,
that was pretty. It was me, Ted DiBiase, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Jake the Snake, Butch Reed,
Steve Williams. Hacksaw Butch Reed.
Yep, Hacksaw. Yep, Butch Reed. What a great guy he was! I learned a lot from him as well. We all hopped on from Bill Watts' Learjet and flew to New Orleans to Shreveport and wrestled again. Very, sold out crowd.
Very, very cool stuff. Very cool times. Well, once again, Jeff, thank you so much for willing to be a guest on the show. It's been such a high honor. Thank you for talking about your wrestling career and your post-wrestling career. And we thank you again for doing the show, Jeff.
Thank you, sir, for allowing me to be on your program. Thank you.
Yeah, we want to thank you very much. He's been so excited about this one.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you. I was excited as well.
Well, good deal. And all right. So we'll wrap everything up. And thank you again, Jeff. Thank you for doing it, sir.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.